I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
All right. Good morning and welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB, weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, offering up a safe space for the independent thinkers out there beholden to no parties, no politicians. Today's Friday. We're going to get to my regular segments next hour. We'll do False Flag Friday. Lots to talk about in the Middle East. Again, still, which is exactly the plan. Got to keep terror in play. Got to keep chaos in play. I actually looked yesterday. I was talking to some people at the station yesterday, making my case that wars are never meant to be won. They are meant to be perpetual. And I was looking up Raytheon stock. Just curious. What's happening to the defense contractor stock? The worst things get in Afghanistan, I got to imagine that the stock price of all the defense contractors has got to go up. It's not good for business to just end a war cleanly and neatly. You got to make sure that you stir up a pot there, make sure future military activity is all but certain. And it was actually flat. Raytheon was flat. I needed to look up United Technologies and Boeing and, you know, the rest of them too. But anyway, it's always good for somebody. War is good for a very select few people. It kind of gets me to my quote of the day today. It's from Upton Sinclair, and it's one of the most true things you will observe in your life. Upton Sinclair says, "It is difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on his not understanding it." It's difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on his not understanding it. See, there are a lot of people in the medical community right now that if they were thinking objectively, if they were just, you know, people like us out here who are looking at a disease that for people under 65 years old has about a 99.9% survival rate. People out here who are looking at a vaccine that has no record. It's the first time this technology has ever been used. It's quite obviously experimental. But medical professionals just, they can't see that because their whole way of life, their licenses and state medical boards will revoke their licenses. You can show them all you want to on ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. Not all of them. Some of them understand this. But for the vast majority of them, you can show them all of these kinds of facts surrounding COVID. They cannot understand it because their salary depends on them not understanding it. It's a very strange phenomenon, but it's very true. I used to be a financial advisor. I'm a little bit immune to that. I was a financial advisor and really in a position where making $100,000 to $200,000 a year was really not that much heavy lifting. And I should have just done it, but I kept seeing these products that we'd have wholesalers from annuity companies come in and tell us how much we could make in commissions if we found money and put it into this particular annuity product or this some kind of a structured real estate product. We could make 10, 12% commissions. And I just didn't think it was right. And I would look around the room at most of my fellow financial advisors and they got all giddy and excited. Oh my, you pay 12% commissions? You know, they would think to themselves, I've got an old lady who's got $350,000 she wants to invest with me. You mean if I put her in this annuity, I'm going to make 12% of $350,000? So it's 40-something thousand dollars. They were on their calculators trying to figure out what they could make. And I looked around and said, this annuity, it's no good. It's expensive for the client. It's You know, old people can't get their money back for 20 years. I mean, whatever it was, I looked around. Unfortunately, I did understand something, even though my salary depended on it, and it eventually washed me out of the entire industry. I starved. I had to leave because I did understand how bad some of the products were that we were supposed to sell, and I couldn't sell them. So I'm a little bit immune to that. You know, so the quote of the day is about people not understanding something because their salary depends on them not understanding it. But I don't understand people who refuse to understand something when they get no benefit from it. And this is a lot of the people who have really dug in on one side or, you know, on the masking side. You can show them endless reams of evidence in well-credentialed papers from the Lancet to the Journal of Pediatrics to the National Institutes of Health. But they refuse to accept that masks do not work and are actually dangerous. They just they don't get any benefit from it. It's actually harming them, but they refuse to see it. But it's not just them. And, I've actually been finding myself on the popular part of conservative Republican circles lately during these COVID restrictions, which I've fought against and talked out against, and the vaccine mandates and the problems with this experiment. I will tell you, this radio station, I think, has been doing extremely well because a lot of people have emailed me and I think other hosts at the station and said, we've come to you from some of the other WGOP stations who are just carrying water for everything from the vaccine to the Republican Party. You have to understand, a lot of stations do not say what they want to say. They say what they are told to say because of their financial benefactors. And we're an independent station. We've been picking up, I think, a lot of refugees from some of the more establishment media outlets. I love that. And I got to tell you, it's been kind of nice. New listeners just about every day are emailing me, some calling in, people I've never heard from. And I've gotten those words. I came over from another station because I just couldn't listen to them hawk this vaccine anymore. I couldn't listen to them support the mainstream Republicans here in Mississippi anymore. And so they've come to WY. So I've kind of enjoyed being, you know, on the inside, gaining some little popularity, but I'm about to peel off from the herd again. I'll shoot myself in the foot because the big news of yesterday was 12 Marines killed in Afghanistan. It's just incredibly sad. Just really, really. I mean, you know, I'm an anti-war guy. I think all of these deaths are horrific. I think the deaths of innocent people around the world are absolutely horrific. And this is just incredibly sad. And so I certainly am in line with people on the right that really respect what our military does and think how tragic it is to have 12 Marines killed on the same day in this what looks to us like a bungled operation of trying to get us out of Afghanistan. But where I divert from the typical right-wing talking point stuff is that I'm not going to spend this eye-opening event laying all the blame on Joe Biden personally, as most of the right wants to do. Biden is an empty suit. Came out and did a statement last night from his little old man body and made it through a few minutes of coherent speech and then kind of shrunk back into nothingness, where I guess they took him back and gave him a nap. But I think the right and conservatives are missing a huge point of this whole thing. The attacks and the deaths of our Marines yesterday was horrific. But they never should have been there in the first place. And what I see the right doing is spending all of their time with every single one of these stories that come out. I see the right being completely reactionary. It is this singular event. Someone must be blamed for this singular event. This never should have happened. On the day yesterday, these 12 Marines should have gone back to their barracks and slept soundly last night. Instead of actually being proactive and realizing that this is not all a Joe Biden mess, it is a George W. Bush, Barack Obama, Donald Trump, Joe Biden mess. You can criticize the pullout all you want. We're going to talk about it next hour. My spidey senses are going off. Something seems a little weird about this to me. But if we were more proactive, you want to save 12 Marines? Stop your politicians from sending them halfway around the world to fight and die in the sand for nothing. I share the sorrow of everybody. I think it was just, it's tragic what happened yesterday. But you will never solve anything by saying, well, we just had the wrong guy in charge. I mean, the problem wasn't that we had 12 Marines in Afghanistan 20 years after 9/11. People aren't paying any attention to that. They're looking at this one singular operation, this one singular event, and again, reacting to that instead of realizing and being proactive. I want to save the next 12 Marines by stopping our politicians from sending them halfway around the world to occupy countries that have not attacked us. And I don't know if the right will ever get that right. I keep feeling like they're coming a little bit more to the anti-war, and then things like this happen, and the talking heads, the Mike Pompeos, the Tom Cottons, the Marco Rubios, the Lindsey Grahams take to Fox News, and they tell everybody what an abject failure Joe Biden is and how this is, the blood is on his hands. Well, you can say that, but I would say the people who committed us to these wars in the first place, what about the blood on the hands for the previous 3,000 U.S. troops that were killed in Afghanistan? Is it, maybe it's 2,000 in Afghanistan. Does George Bush not have blood on his hands? Does Barack Obama not have blood on his hands? Does Donald Trump not have blood on his hands of every one of the deaths in these ridiculous wars that we've been fighting for 20 years? As does Joe Biden. Joe Biden is a blood-soaked war criminal, as far as I'm concerned. But I think the right is falling right back into the warmonger's trap by saying this: the pullout is the problem. No, it's the invasion in the first place. The fact that we ever occupied another country, and this is including every other one of these countries that we have also invaded and occupied for years and years, the blood on the hands is not only Joe Biden's. It goes back from administration to administration to administration for about 70 years. I also hear people saying, and again, I've enjoyed my brief stint of popularity as I pose the vaccines and the COVID lockdowns and some other things. I've enjoyed that, but here I go. I'll sabotage myself again. I hear people saying Trump never would have put up with what these Taliban attacks over the past few weeks as the Taliban started making their real push towards Kabul. And I think you're right. Donald Trump would not have put up with it. You know what he would have done? He would have sent a bunch more troops, and the war would have gone on for another year, 5 years, 10 years. There was never going to be a smooth exit out of Afghanistan. Now, you can say, and again, this is proving a negative. I mean, these are the hardest things to do, but you can say, well, it definitely would have been better than this. And you may be right. I certainly don't give the Biden administration or the Pentagon under Joe Biden or at any time any real credit for these things, but this was always going to be a mess. When you have a government that we have been training, funding, and propping up for 20 years fold in 48 hours, that government was never going to stand on its own two feet. Never, ever. Trump in office, Ron DeSantis in office, pick your favorite hero, Tom Cotton in office. An Afghan government that was propped up for 20 years with billions of dollars of U.S. training, arming, and funding that folded in 48 hours was always going to be a country that was handed back to the Taliban. And you know, the other thing that's odd about this, I mean, I'm hearing a lot of horror stories about the Taliban themselves because they are just, you know, their dark age mentality, their abuse of women, their lopping off heads. Truly terrible people with a terrible ideology. But you know who they remind me of? When you hear about the strict religious fanaticism of the Taliban, when you see the real patriarchy, not what they point to here in the United States, the insane social justice warriors, but a true patriarchy where women are almost treated like cattle. You know what it reminds me of? Anybody? Does it remind you of any other governments in the Middle East? Kind of reminds me of, I don't know, Saudi Arabia. You know, our good friend and ally, Saudi Arabia, treats their citizens about the same way the Taliban treats the Afghan citizen. I know we're not supposed to point that out, because Saudi Arabia is our great ally. I mean, our presidents go over there, they bow, they curtsy, they do the sword dance. Oh, we love us some Saudi Arabia. Call them an ally. We've got 3,000 of our troops over there protecting Saudi Arabia right now, supposedly from Iran, from the Houthi rebels in Yemen. But the Taliban, if you look down at the ideology, if you look at how they treat gay people or how they treat women or how they behead people, you might just notice that the consistency of our foreign policy is a little lacking, because we're best buds. We're besties with Saudi Arabia that behaves a little bit more polished, right? They do it from the kingdom. They order the lopping off of heads in Saudi Arabia from the back seat of a stretch Mercedes limousine. So there is that, but the policies and the attitude towards their citizens is about the same. It's strange, though, that Taliban is bad, Saudi Arabia good, with exactly the same systems in place.
The way I always do. How was I to know? She was with the Russians too.
All right, I'm gonna get you back on my side in just a second, because I'll go back to the well that makes me more palatable to some people. You know, I start off this hour with this quote. It's difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on him not understanding it. And as I laid out earlier, I understand that. You know, if somebody's making money off something that is wrong, they refuse to see it because they have to. I mean, you know, you're asking them to sacrifice more than other people because they, you know, to get a doctor in the past year to come out and admit that, you know, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine have worked for some people, that masking doesn't work for anybody, that Sweden has done better doing nothing, basically nothing about COVID, than all of the countries that have done these mitigation efforts. If a doctor comes out and admits that, they risk losing their license. So I guarantee you there are a lot of medical professionals out there who have been hiding from this information. You send one of your medical buddies, it's a card-carrying member of the AMA, some information about how masking doesn't work, they're not going to open that attachment. They don't want to know. Because if they find it out and it starts to gnaw away at their brains and they say something publicly, they may be fired from their hospital, from the medical group, have their AMA license revoked. They have to go along. They have to toe the party line. So I understand those people. They've got really something on the line. I don't approve of it. I think you're either honest or not. And with doctors, it's especially annoying to me because they pose as these great champions of our health. You know, it's one thing to not accept something when you don't really affect a lot of people, but when you cling to failed policies that are actually hurting people because you refuse to look at the truth, that's soul-wrecking. You may have a time, and maybe not in this life, but in the next, where you have to kind of explain that. You have to justify it somehow. But for the war stuff, for the Afghanistan stuff, I know people like to play their partisan games. Everybody wants to blame Joe Biden exclusively for this. The thing about the war stuff to me is that the American people are getting nothing from this. You're not getting any money from this. You're not getting cheaper oil from Middle Eastern stuff. I mean, you're getting bupkis from all of it. You're getting absolutely nothing. So why is it hard to come to the grips with that every administration, Republican and Democrat, have betrayed you on this? They have enriched a very small number of people. They have sacrificed our soldiers. They have killed innocent people. And you have gotten nothing from it. I mean, is the propaganda from the Republican Party, from the Tom Cottons and the Mike Pompeos, just because they said they're Trump guys, is the grip they have on you so strong that even though you are watching your nation be bankrupted in these foreign adventures, you will still cling to this idea that it is done for national security and that we need to support every one of these actions because the Taliban are going to come to America and take our stuff? Do you really believe that? I see no benefit to the American people, no benefit to our soldiers of any of this stuff. Yet still people refuse to see the truth and they want to just play these partisan games. Oh, if we had a Republican running the war, it'd be much better. I got a caller on the line. Caller, are you with me?
I am, Mike. How are you this morning?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Where do we go from here? That's what I want to know. We can sit and blame everybody. I mean, this Middle East has been mishandled for way more than 20 years.
Oh, yes, 75 years.
Both
yeah.
agree on it.
Yeah. I mean, from at least 1953. Yeah.
So, you know, this is all, and it's the same song, just a different dance of every time. You know, every time we turn around, we have this. Where do we go? I can blame Biden, and it's obvious that Biden's not. We can blame Biden, but Biden's just the fall guy. He's not in charge.
Right. We can
He's
blame Biden. We can blame Biden for the last 10 days out of the last 20 years.
But all I'm saying is, where do we go from here? How do we fix this? We've got a mess on our hands.
Well, I'll tell you what my goal with this show is. The reason that I bring it up so much is because Republicans have really been the drivers of the wars. I hate to say it, but conservatives and Republicans have been so... They have been propagandized to replace or confuse militarism with patriotism. Patriotism being the love of this country and the founding documents and the freedoms that we should have. That's what is to be proud of the United States, that we have this experiment in freedom that was just fantastic. But people have confused that with military might. They believe that the strength of the United States is not the Constitution. It's the fact that we've got the best bombs and the most bombs and the best trained military in the world. There's nothing patriotic about wanting to go invade another smaller country that's essentially helpless and bog yourself down there for 20 years. So, in a long-winded way, my point is that Republicans and conservatives, because they really drove the war machine for the past 60 years, in spite of Eisenhower's warnings, the Republicans need to start going to Roger Wicker's events, Cindy Hyde Smith's events, Michael Guest's events, and when they say, we're going to give the military more money, they should boo. They should say no. Bring our troops home. Because if conservatives were really kind of the drivers there. Now, liberals, they lost their anti-war message a long time ago. But conservatives have been the ones, the Fox News viewer has been the one that has been really excited about us putting our boot on the throat of other countries whenever we want to. So they could turn this tide by taking these warmongers like Tom Cotton and Mike Pompeo and telling them, no, we don't believe you anymore. We're not getting anything from this. And now we've lost 12 more Marines in your misguided adventures. Republicans have got to stand up to their own people and quit cheering all of the money and the foreign adventurism.
Well, and I'm not disagreeing with any of that. But the liberals got to stand up, too, because I may have missed it, but I have yet to see one Democrat stand up and say, we shouldn't be in all these wars. They just sit over there. They let the Republicans carry the water and promote it. They just sit over there and just make sure it helps keep going too.
Yeah,
there's none of them trying to stop it. Their silence is deafening.
Right, absolutely. I mean, and I think that was Obama's effect on them. Yeah, Obama and the mainstream media, and I'm going to play a clip about that later. The mainstream media is the biggest bunch of war cheerleaders, and the mainstream media, because the left thinks they're with them, the mainstream media has propagandized and tricked the left into getting rid of their anti-war stuff. But I'll tell you right now, I watched, and I was probably guilty of it too. I remember the anti-war movement back in 2001, 2002, 2003, the Cindy Sheehans, the Code Pinks. Conservatives just looked down their nose at them, called them communists and traitors. Now, some of them might have been communists, but they were dead right on their anti-war stance, and Republicans looked at them like dirty hippies. But they were right, weren't they?
Well, sure they were. They were, I mean, anti-war people, true anti-war people have been right about all of this stuff for a long, long, long time.
Right.
But all I'm saying is, there's enough blame to go around for everybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And my, you know, rehashing and talking about blaming and pointing fingers, that ain't fixing the damn problem. We need somebody that's going to fix the damn problem.
Well, it's us. It is only us. You're not going to elect anybody. Donald Trump did not withdraw us out of the Middle East. You know, Donald Trump, I have no patience for people who say, oh, Trump would have done this so much better. Trump had 4 years, really 4.5 years, because he campaigned on getting us out of these wars. So when it looked like he was a viable candidate for president, he should have been putting together plans that on day one. You want to talk about a policy to hit the ground running when you become president of the United States after campaigning on getting us out of the Middle East? You hit the ground running by immediately looking at withdrawal from all of these countries. But he held it off and he put the date into the next, his second term, if he got an elected term, or he did exactly what is working great politically right now for Trump, which is, oh, I dumped this into Joe Biden's lap because I knew it was going to be a disaster. Now it's his disaster and we can make fun of him. So I've got no tolerance for this idea that, oh, Donald Trump would have done this so much better because he had 4 years to do it.
Well, and I agree, but on the flip side too, who in Washington was there to support Trump with anything that he wanted to do?
Well,
Trump campaigned and the Republicans campaigned for how many years about repealing Obamacare? They get to the first day of office. They've got a president who would sign it. They've got control of the House and the Senate. And all of a sudden, all of the Congress, they got alligator arms when it comes time to start passing a bill now to repeal Obamacare.
Exactly. Well, but the difference between any of those other things, I don't care if it's the wall or Obamacare, foreign policy, Donald Trump could have said, we're out of there. Give me a plan. And when his generals came and said, I don't think that's wise, Mr. President, he could have told them, I don't really care what you think. The American people are sick of these wars. I'm sick of seeing our kids dying. We're getting nothing from this. Give me a plan. Now, people say, well, they might have killed him or, you know, any of these ideas. Well, then that was the job. That's what he campaigned on. There's not a good excuse for not doing it. But the thing with foreign policy, things like wars, it's him. He doesn't need Congress to bring our troops back. He is the commander in chief. The problem Donald Trump had is that he hired the architects of these wars, the John Boltons, the Elliot Abrams. He got a Raytheon guy running the Defense Department, a Boeing guy running the Defense Department. He hired Mike Pompeo, a CIA head who is a warmongering neocon. He surrounded himself with the people that started and fomented these wars for 20 years. He brought them in. What? Why?
Why? Because he really probably didn't have a choice.
Well, then he was ineffective. Yeah.
I'm not a Trump defender, and Trump doesn't need me to defend him. But all I'm saying is one guy ain't going to Washington and fixing this. One ain't going to do it.
Well, then we sure as hell can't give him any credit for doing anything.
Oh, I'm not giving him any credit.
Yeah, I know you're not, but people do. They act like he was the guy that was structurally changing everything. He didn't change anything. He just kept the status quo. He surged troops into Afghanistan while he was there.
Well,
for what?
But, I mean, there again, that's the narrative. How many times was Obama? I mean, hell, Obama was given a Nobel Peace Prize before he ever took office.
But,
and what did he do? He kept the bombings up.
Oh, he expanded them. He started four new wars. Yeah, Obama is just absolutely disgusting. But, you know, look, the bottom line is conservatives have been driving the war machine. I'm sorry. I used to do it, too. I was a Kool-Aid-drinking neocon Republican. So conservatives need to make an about-face, realize their mistake, realize you're not getting anything from these wars, and the conservatives and Republicans should be the leading anti-war voice. And I've got a quote of the day for False Flag Friday next hour. We've got a bad connection there. Sorry about that, Robert. I got a quote, quote of the day for False Flag Friday that should say something to conservatives, but I believe conservatives, Fox News led us into these wars. Now, the rest of the media is also war cheerleaders. Conservatives should be the people to lead us out of these wars. But we don't have strong enough hands to just say no more. 12 Marines died yesterday because we will not stand up against the people that keep these wars going. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. If you tuned in to hear that we just needed more Republicans and a better government to run this evacuation military operation better, you may be right. This might have gone better. It wasn't going to go good. It might have gone better. Maybe those particular Marines would still be alive because they did it in a different order or something like that. But I'm not letting the warmongers off the hook. They created this mess. Again, the government in Afghanistan that we trained, we supplied them weapons, we funded them, and we propped them up for 20 years, they folded in 48 hours. That's not Joe Biden's fault. I can't stand Joe Biden. But if you're looking for a host to come on here and say, well, you know, we don't like the wars, but, you know, the Republicans fight them so much. I mean, this is a bipartisan failure. It's every administration, really for the last 75 years. You know, what Eisenhower saw coming out of World War II, you know, he was a general. And I'm going to go back to my quote. I guess I've got a theme for the day. So it's difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on his not understanding it. Well, even Eisenhower is a retired general. When he got into the White House, he looked around and he saw this defense industry coming up and getting political power and realizing that they saw how much money they could make during World War I, World War II, and they said, holy cow, we got to keep these little parties going. We're killing it. And Eisenhower, whose salary no longer depended on it because he was a retired general and it was on his way out of the presidency, he said, hey, Americans, look out. So his salary didn't depend on it anymore. He said, Americans, look out. Maybe I should play the Eisenhower quote. He said, you need to be careful about this. That was in 1961. It was a farewell address, so I guess it was 61. 1961, Eisenhower said. They've got too much power. We've never had this before in the United States. This is going to be a disaster. And we just said, well, whatever. Kennedy saw it, and we saw what happened to Kennedy. But if you're looking for some guy to come on here and just blast Joe Biden like everything was going swimmingly until Joe Biden came. Lloyd Austin, the defense guy right now, maybe the worst defense person we've ever had. He's so bad. But we didn't have good ones under Donald Trump. We had a Raytheon executive running the Defense Department. What do you think is going to happen? You think the Raytheon executive is going to... You think he's a peacenik that cares about our troops? No, 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 no. Mark Esper was a Raytheon lobbyist, a Raytheon executive. And we put him in charge of a $1 trillion budget. Well, I guess the Department of Defense, I think it's $768 billion, $725 billion when he was in office. Joe Biden, the blood-soaked war criminal that Joe Biden is, he increased the Defense Department. I came to this show as anti-war. If anybody's been around for a while, I'm anti-war. If the United States cannot defend itself, I mean, do you seriously believe that Iran is going to come over here and mess with us? We're half a world away. They don't have a navy, barely have an air force. If we weren't dropping bombs on the heads of the people in the Middle East, I don't think we'd really be much of a factor. Oh, sure, they'd be fighting each other. I mean, that's a shame. It's a crime. There's a bunch of fanatics over there running things. The Middle East just has a different brand of psychopath. We have our psychopaths. They have their psychopaths. Our psychopaths, unfortunately, wield such incredible power. They're like the minor leagues. They're like street gangs over in the Middle East, fighting with each other and trying to get territory and trying to impose Sharia law on people so that the men can have their way with the entire society. It's like gang turf wars over there. With us, ooh, it's corporate. It's corporate psychopathy. We're going to take on the whole world. We want your country. We want your oil. We want your minerals. We want our pipelines going through there. If you don't bend to that, we'll let you know how we feel. How about we send a couple hundred thousand of the best trained, most professional military people in the world over to occupy your country for a couple of decades? And it still doesn't go well. And again, you're getting nothing from it. Nothing but wrecking debt. Your grandchildren, your children and your grandchildren are going to pay the price for these things. So you got 22 hours a day to listen to conservative media tell you this is all Joe Biden's fault. If we just had a stronger leader in there, then this would have just gone great. I'm here to tell you that's not true. The conservatives, Republicans, they have no record to stand on of some kind of decisive, quick, swift victories at limited cost of both lives and treasure. No. They have prolonged, infinite, bloody, unlawful wars. And I think they're going to get some more. As I say, my spidey sense is going off a little bit. I'll play a clip next hour. If you find yourself on the same side of the argument as Chuck Todd, he's the freak that runs Meet the Press on NBC. One of the worst, one of my most hated. Something he does with his eyes. You ever watch him at the end of a segment? He'll make a point. He'll kind of tilt his head back and close his eyes. It feels very pretentious to me. I don't know why I zero in on that. I zero in on Chuck Todd's eye closing and Sean Hannity's two CIA lapel pins he wears every single night. It's just two bees in my bonnet. But when you find yourself on the same side of the argument as Chuck Todd, because Chuck Todd is laying all this stuff at Biden's feet, I'll play. When you find yourself on the same side of the argument as Chuck Todd, I'm telling you, it's time to stop for just a second and go, wait a second, am I being duped? If Chuck Todd is agreeing with me, maybe my position is wrong. I'm telling you, I'll play his clip next hour.
Yeah. It's been a ride. I guess I had to go to that place to get to this one. Now some of you might still be in that place. If you're trying to get out, just follow me.
All right, well, I ended up doing, I had some vaccine stuff. I'd said I was going to get you back on my side. I've got some clips from Robert Malone, the inventor of the mRNA vaccine. And I thought I don't have time to get to him. I ended up foreign policy the whole time. I don't understand why conservatives repel from the idea of being anti-war. People will say, I think it's time to end the wars in Afghanistan, but you won't go far enough to say I'm anti-war. I got to tell you, when I get to the pearly gates, I'm going to wear that badge proudly. Kind of feels like you should be anti-war. You know, just the term itself. I know a lot of people equate it with dirty hippies of the 1960s, but it does turn out they were right about Vietnam, weren't they? And so I think that conservatives have just bought into this idea that being anti-war somehow makes you weak, means you hate the military, it means you're naive, you're a pacifist. I'm in no way, shape, or form a pacifist. But I also know that Anthony Fauci is a greater threat to my freedom than the Taliban is. I mean, you have to really believe a lot of really strange things to think that the endless wars, any of them, were justified then or now. You have to believe that the Taliban is somehow going to impose Sharia law on our country. You know, people have got this idea that if we don't fight them over there, we're going to be fighting them over here. Well, why do you think that is? Because I'm looking at a map. I actually pulled it up during the break. Switzerland's got a lot of weird people on their border. I mean, they're not far from even some Muslim countries, but they also got the Germans, they got the French, they got the Italians all right next to them there, all with different cultures and different ideas. Strange that nobody's marching over the border of Switzerland to go take their stuff. Taliban and people in Iran are not chanting, death to Switzerland, death to Switzerland. I wonder why not. I mean, Switzerland, their little girls get to grow up and vote. They have their freedoms. I mean, you look at maps all over the place. There aren't countries that are just arbitrarily invading each other and taking each other's stuff. But we're supposed to believe that Iran, with no Navy and no Air Force to speak of, is somehow going to hurt the United States somehow. And so when we assassinate one of their generals, that's a strong leadership move by the United States. How does that help us? The general, Soleimani, was not leading some Revolutionary Guard force to invade Miami anytime soon. They would probably have to fly commercial to even get there. A- anti-war is not a dirty word. It is logical. Nobody should want war. Conservatives, they just get up to that line. And it was such a great thing about Donald Trump. He woke a lot of conservatives up to the wars. It was no longer cool to support constant military action with Donald Trump. It's why he got my vote. But you just can't, bring yourself to step across that line and say, oh, no, all of these things are bad. Now it's a partisan issue again. We just need Republicans in there running the Pentagon. Then we'll really kick some butt over there in the Middle East. What's that getting you? What is that getting you? Mike Madison at WYEB.com. Send me a long, heartfelt message of what you're getting from these wars. How it's making the lives of your children better. Because you believe that if Soleimani had not been assassinated under the strong leadership of Donald Trump, you believe the Madison School District would be run by Sharia law by now. I mean, what is it you think you're getting from this stuff? Anti-war is not a dirty word. It should be the motto, and the conservatives should be leading it at this point.
Yeah. What is it good for?
Absolutely.
Nothing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What is it good for?
Absolutely.
Nothing.
Say it again, y'all.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me on this Friday. And on Fridays at 10 o'clock, normally we switch into foreign policy stuff, but since it took me through the whole first hour with this incredible 20-year, not just 1 week, not just 10 days, 20-year mess in Afghanistan, it is top of the headlines again. You know, somebody was sending out pictures the other day, some really horrific pictures of Afghanis that were killed around the airport there. And it is, you know, at the hands of the Taliban. It's just really disgusting. And I asked them, though, I totally agreed with them. It was just horrific, horrific footage of it. It shows the brutality of the Taliban themselves. They're not good people. But it is interesting to me that I did not get those kinds of images from people during the 1990s when 500,000 Iraqi children died because of the sanctions from the U.S. and allies on Iraq. No fly zone, no medicine, no food, sanctions. We cut them off. This is during the Clinton administration. 500,000 children died. Nobody sent me a picture of the horrific death of 500,000 children. Children. As a matter of fact, the Secretary of State at the time, Madeleine Albright, was asked about it. I've got the clip. I should have pulled it up. She was asked about it, and she said, yeah, we think it was worth it. They asked her directly, do you think the deaths of 500,000 children was worth it in Iraq? And she said, yes, I believe it was worth it. Now, let me ask you, just take off all of your war propaganda programming for a second there and think if you're sitting in the middle of the Middle East, you're an average Iraqi citizen. If 500,000 children died, you probably lost a child, or you certainly know children who died during that basically surrounding of Iraq and crippling them. When you hear the Secretary of State for the United States say, yeah, 500,000 dead Iraqi children, I think it's worth what we wanted to do. Would that make you angry if you were an Iraqi mom or dad who had lost a child? Would that radicalize you? Or do you think that you were already radicalized because we let our little girls vote? George Bush told you they hate us for our freedom. Is that what you really still believe? You believe that they hate us for our freedom, but they don't really mind that we were responsible for 500,000 deaths of Iraqi children during the 1990s under Bill Clinton. I don't know how to make this stuff much simpler. Maybe Joseph Sorbrand, I've got a quote from him today. Maybe this will help. Joseph Sorbrand says, quote, war has all the characteristics of socialism most conservatives hate. Centralized power, state planning, false rationalism, restricted liberties, foolish optimism about intended results, and blindness to unintended secondary results. War has all the characteristics of socialism most conservatives hate. Julian Assange, you remember him? He's rotting in a British cell right now because the U.S. deep state under Donald Trump, it's accurate, so I have to say it, under Donald Trump, and particularly Mike Pompeo, who called Julian Assange a hostile foreign actor, something along these lines. He was essentially like the whistleblower's whistleblower, Julian Assange. He's rotten in a jail, but he did have a quote that I wanted to play.
Some Saudi figures have been supporting ISIS, funding ISIS. But the dodge has always been it's just some rogue princes using their cut of the oil money to do whatever they like, but actually the government disapproves. But that email says that no, it is the governments of Saudi and the government and Qatar that have been funding ISIS.
The governments of Saudi Arabia. See, Julian Assange let us know the truth back, you know, when he was out in the wild as a free person, but the Trump administration decided to force him into a cage and persecute him until he slow dies over there. He had emails between foreign leaders that essentially said, you know, well, not essentially, they said the Saudi Arabian government and the Qatar government are funding ISIS. I think that that's important context to know the day after the death of 12 of our Marines at the hands of ISIS-K. Our great allies, the Saudis and the Qataris, have been funding ISIS all along with our own CIA, John McCain, who went over there and took pictures with the leaders of ISIS. Was it Baghdadi? Al-Baghdadi? Is that the one that John McCain had his arm around? Called him a moderate rebel. He was the leader of ISIS. And John McCain was helping to make sure that those guys got the money. So as I read this, because ISIS has now formally claimed responsibility for the Kabul bombings and has provided a photo of at least one alleged suicide bomber, I say the attacker was able to reach a distance of no less than 5 meters from the American forces who were supervising the procedures for collecting documents from hundreds of translators and contractors in preparation for their evacuation from the country. The ISIS statement accused the Taliban of being in partnership with the U.S. military to evacuate spies and boasted that its bomber managed to penetrate all of the security measures imposed by the American forces and the Taliban militia at the capital, Kabul. So this is ISIS, who has been funded by Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and some of your own tax dollars, made it to those air quotes here in the studio, moderate rebels. A lot of very unfortunate where we did big drops of weapons and rations and all kinds of equipment in the deserts in Middle East. And it just happened that ISIS happened upon it. Huh. That's weird. It's been a couple of months ago that we found out that ISIS had taken over areas that had, what was it, like 600 Humvees ISIS has? Oops. If you find yourself thinking, I don't know how many people know this history, so I'll do it real quickly. I didn't plan on doing this, so let me see if I can get my thoughts together here. In the 1970s and the 1980s, the United States quite overtly, not covertly, but overtly funded the Mujahideen. They were Islamic fighters in Afghanistan because they were fighting with the Soviet Union as part of the Cold War. We funded the Mujahideen. Mujahideen then became Al-Qaeda. Does everybody know what Al-Qaeda means in English? It means the base. And where does that come from? It comes from the database. The database that America had on these Mujahideen fighters, these Islamic fighters. Our CIA had a roster because they'd been funding them and providing them weapons to fight the Soviets. Suddenly they are Al-Qaeda. Why did these Mujahideen fighters, who we funded to protect their country from Russia, suddenly turn on the U.S.? Now, George Bush will tell you that they hated us for our freedoms. But the Al-Qaeda itself has said, and bin Laden had put out statements saying, the reason that we turned on the Americans was because they were occupying our lands. They were setting up bases in Saudi Arabia. They were occupying our countries. They were meddling around in Muslim affairs. So we fund these radical groups, get them up to full strength, and then we tick them off. And then we continue to fund them while we tick them off, making it easier to radicalize more and more people in the Middle East by stealing resources. It's not us. You know, if anybody's out there saying, well, this guy's a blame America first, it's not the United States doing this. It's the psychopaths who run our foreign policy that, unfortunately, we have been cheering for. Well, you have. I did up until about 2003. 2004, I supported the invasion of Iraq because I was a young, stupid idiot. Is that hard for people to admit? It's so easy for me to admit how stupid I was. I mean, I was really dumb. I didn't know 95% of the things I know now. So I was ignorant, too. It's not that I was just dumb. I was very ignorant because I didn't understand anything about the Middle East. But I let George Bush get me into a fervor for going over and stomping on some faces over in the Middle East. So we create the terror groups. Then we go over and we do things that make their recruitment easy as pie. And then when they recruit a bunch of people and they lash out against us in the Middle East, we say it's because they hate America for our freedom, and that promotes more wars against these groups. The war on terror, and I believe we're about to see war on terror 2.0 now. I'm going to play this Chuck Todd clip real quick. Because if you find yourself on the same if you find yourself on the same page with Chuck Todd at NBC, Meet the Press guy, I'm telling you, it is time to pause and reflect and make sure that you are thinking clearly. Because Chuck Todd is not right about anything. He wasn't right about Donald Trump. He wasn't right about Russia collusion. He wasn't right about anything. But now you find yourself on the same page with Chuck Todd. I'm telling you, that should make you pause for a minute.
Chuck, good morning. It's good to see you. So the president has stood firmly by his decision to withdraw troops from Afghanistan. The administration, in fact, saying, look, this was going to happen whenever we got out. This was inevitable in some ways. But he's been criticized not just by Republicans, but by Democrats and a lot of people in this country. Where is he in this decision right now? Does he suspect we may have to stay longer than that deadline of late August here?
Well, that's the question I'm going to have this morning for Jake Sullivan when he's on this program, which is, you know, you've pledged to get every American out. It's pretty clear many Americans are stuck, can't even get to Kabul, let alone to the airport. You can't accomplish it by the 31st. Is it time to surge more troops in? Are they going to have to actually surge more troops?
Look at that. Chuck Todd wants more troops. Huh. You find yourself on the same page with Chuck Todd?
This evacuation, but ultimately, Willie, you know, this keeps coming back to sort of the same, you know, but rather than debate that should have we has stay or go, why did we why did we pull out the military before the civilians, right? Ultimately, that decision in April and May of doing that, shutting down Bagram, shutting down the military aspect of this before we got our allies out and before we got civilians, that just looks like a catastrophic decision now in hindsight.
Yeah. So there you go. Chuck Todd's on board with you. Because the media loves war. I have this old clip, too. This was Brian Williams, the long-since discredited NBC correspondent. Do you remember when, I mean, Brian Williams hated Donald Trump, came after him at every single turn, always opposed him in the political theater of the day. But when it came to a bombing, oh, Brian Williams was, I believe he was sexually aroused.
You. Oh, I saw this one.
Wait until you get a load of this one.
We see these beautiful pictures at night from the decks of these two U.S. Navy vessels in the Eastern Mediterranean. I am tempted to quote the great Leonard Cohen. I'm guided by the beauty of our weapons. And they are beautiful pictures of fearsome armaments making what is for them a brief flight over to this airfield. What did they hit?
That's Brian Williams. He sounds sexually excited about these bombs going off. This is what I wish the Democrats would catch on to, that your buddies in the media that carry water for you every single day are a bunch of blood-soaked warmongers. Wars are good for ratings, and the corporate benefactors of the major media companies are all invested in these defense industries, too. It's the propaganda. Caller earlier talked about the left. Where are they on the wars? Well, they used to be good on them until the media got bought and paid for by the defense industry. And so now they carry water with it. When you find yourself on the same side of an issue with Chuck Todd and Brian Williams, I'm telling you, it's time to pause and reflect. To kind of complete my thought on the idea that Chuck Todd, I mean, aren't you surprised to see the media coming out? They are being hardcore on the Biden administration about this botched pullout of Afghanistan. That should make you suspicious. Do you think the media suddenly is objective and they want to hold, you know, truth to power and they're just seeing what you see? I smell a rat. I'm telling you right now, Joe Biden is a potted plant. He's a placeholder. And I don't know what the plan is, but when the media, because they've got, I mean, the media is always dishonest. So they could just come out. They could blame Trump for this. They could say this was going to happen no matter what. There's all kinds of ways they could weasel out of this and keep Joe Biden looking pristine, you know, to their viewers. But they're not doing that. They're actually going after Joe Biden pretty hardcore and talking about what a disaster this is, that Joe Biden's got blood on his hands. When you see the media doing that, I'm telling you, I get very suspicious. I don't believe they've suddenly become objective and rational. And it may be that this is going to be the thing that they use to get Joe Biden out. The question being, what would the purpose of that be? I don't think they really want a president, Kamala Harris, but she is so compromised and horrible. Maybe they feel like she's more capable of running the scam that they want to run. I don't know what it is. As I told you, I had a dream that they put Hillary in. I would be suspicious. I can't stand Joe Biden. I am just like everybody else. Joe Biden is absolutely probably the worst president we've ever had in American history. I'm with you on that. But I'm even more nervous of what they could replace him with. A pretty bad spot to be in this country. I'm just telling you, I smell a rat. Something funky seems to be going on. I don't believe the media suddenly became objective and honest. I think they're up to something. We'll see how this thing plays out. Well, one real quick thing, and then I'm going to play an old speech from 2009. Keep an eye on this. Israel's military is accelerating its operational plans against Iran due to the progress of the Islamic Republic's nuclear program, IDF Chief of Staff Lieutenant General Aviv Kohavi has warned. Now listen to this sentence. Quote, the progress of the Iranian nuclear program has led the IDF to accelerate its operational plans, and the recently approved defense budget is earmarked for that. Israel's already budgeted in an Iranian war. And in times of chaos like this, this is just fantastic cover for everything to blow up in the Middle East. And don't think for a second Israel won't be calling on American soldiers to come over there and help with this little Iran mop-up thing. Iran is the last country left on Wesley Clark's list of 7 countries the U.S. was going to take down. I think it's always in play. The Israelis want it in play right now. And out of this chaos, we could find ourselves stumbling into a war because we do anything Israel tells us to do. I'm going to play a clip. I tell you, I'm anti-war, proudly. When I get to the pearly gates, I'm going to be happy to say I resisted every one of these wars. I'm not a pacifist. If somebody attacks the United States, unleash the hounds. But I am anti-military adventurism and anti-war, and these kinds of speeches are what got me there.
Madam Speaker, I have a few questions for my colleagues.
This is the great Dr. Ron Paul.
What if our foreign policy of the past century is deeply flawed and has not served our national security interests? What if we wake up one day and realize that the terrorist threat is a predictable consequence of our meddling in the affairs of others and has nothing to do with us being free and prosperous? What if propping up repressive regimes in the Middle East endangers both the United States and Israel? What if occupying countries like Iraq and Afghanistan and bombing Pakistan is directly related to the hatred directed toward us? What if someday it dawns on us that losing over 5,000 American military personnel in the Middle East since 9/11 is not a fair trade-off for the loss of nearly 3,000 American citizens, no matter how many Iraqi, Pakistani, and Afghan people are killed or displaced? What if we finally decide that torture, even if called enhanced interrogation technique, is self-destructive and produces no useful information, and that contracting it out to a third world nation is just as evil? What if it is finally realized that war and military spending is always destructive to the economy? What if all wartime spending is paid for through the deceitful and evil process of inflating and borrowing? What if we finally see that wartime conditions always undermine personal liberty? What if conservatives who preach small government wake up and realize that our interventionist foreign policy provides the greatest incentive to expand the government? What if conservatives understood once again that their only logical position, military intervention and managing an empire throughout the world? What if the American people woke up and understood that the official reasons for going to war are almost always based on lies and promoted by war propaganda in order to serve special interests? What if we as a nation came to realize that the quest for empire eventually destroys all great nations? What if Obama has no intention of leaving Iraq? What if a military draft is being planned for the wars that will spread if our foreign policy is not changed? What if the American people learn the truth, that our foreign policy has nothing to do with national security, that it never changes from one administration to the next? What if war and preparation for war is a racket serving the special interests? What if President Obama is completely wrong about Afghanistan and it turns out worse than Iraq and Vietnam put together? What if Christianity actually teaches peace and not preventive wars of aggression? What if diplomacy is found to be superior to bombs and bribes in protecting America? What happens if my concerns are completely unfounded? Nothing. But what happens if my concerns are justified and ignored? Nothing good. And I yield back the balance of my time.
We were so close to having that man in charge of foreign policy here in the United States. What if conservatives and Republicans actually were the ones to lead the charge against more of these wars?
What's the frequency, can it this y'all been so drained?
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We're going to wrap up the week the same way we do every single week, where we take a look. It takes a lot of work. I get all my clips together for a look back at this week on the crazy train.
All aboard!
I will say, and I continue to say, lucky or not, depressing or not, I don't know, but we have not gone as full totalitarian as Australia has gone, so that's good. Listen to a couple of these clips I've got from Australia. Australia is, their prime minister has come out and said, if you get the shot, I'm going to give you some of your freedoms back. And it's down to, like, they're naming individual freedoms you can have back if you go out and get the jab.
Gladys Berejiklian was on the 7:30 report last night, where she was asked about what is the freedom that is coming.
Well, I'd always promised our citizens that during September there'd be one extra thing they can do so long as we hit the 6 million jabs by the end of August.
Listen to this. This sounds like parents. If you finish your P's, you can get an extra 30 minutes of TV. I mean, is that specific? The Australians have been putting up with this.
There'll be at least one extra thing our citizens can do. Next month in September.
And what's that likely to be?
Well, our health experts are working on that.
Now, there's speculation that one thing fully vaccinated people will be able to do next month once we reach that 6 million jab target is going to be...
Get what can they do? If all you Australians, if you go out and you get the jab, they're going to give you something. What do you think it is? Candy bar? No.
Going and getting a haircut at the hairdresser as long as both parties are fully vaccinated. But again, we won't know details until the end of the week.
Australia's prime minister's come out and said she may let you go get a haircut. Holy cow. This is a little bit more ominous. This is from Queensland.
This is a commitment by the Wagner family working with the Queensland government to say to the people of Queensland, we want to keep you safe. And the best way to keep you safe and to keep Delta out of Queensland.
I want you to pay attention to this happy little joyous music behind this thing. It's just all happy and light until you realize what they're talking about here.
Is to build as quickly as possible a regional quarantine facility. I have listened to Queenslanders. I know how much they support a regional quarantine facility to be in Queensland. They want their community kept safe. That's what they're saying to me, and we are delivering it. This is a race. We are up against a highly infectious Delta variant that's sweeping the world. We don't know what's next. We need to get these facilities up and running. And everybody has seen how successful Howard Springs is.
It's the music. It's the uplifting music as they announce that they are rapidly building COVID concentration camps. But I guess if you build a concentration camp to piano music, anybody will accept it. Of course, we're just as insane here in the United States.
Johnson & Johnson said a booster shot of its COVID-19 vaccine provided a rapid and strong increase in antibodies, supporting use of a second shot among people who previously received its single-dose immunization. The number of antibodies jumped ninefold after a second dose of J&J, which has been linked to an extremely rare number of blood clot issues.
Forget about the blood. It's extremely rare blood clots. Of course, it boosts your antibodies after you take a vax, but it doesn't matter. They're not working. The vaccines are failing. This is, I've got a couple of clips from this guy, Osterholm. I forgot his first name. He was originally like the COVID czar for the Biden transition team, I believe. I don't think he might have been taken out of the government, but he is a darling of the media. He doesn't like the term boosters because he knows that people are saying, you know, they're getting a little suspicious of this. Oh, we got to show up and get our freedoms back every 6 months. That's what they have planned for you. But he doesn't want them called that. He wants to frame these extra jabs as something different.
And Dr. Osterholm, on the heels of this news we're getting today about the J&J shot and possibly an extra shot, you actually take issue with the word booster. Explain why we're getting that language wrong, in your opinion.
Well, a booster infers that I at one time had full protection from the virus and kind here with the vaccine.
What? Wait, what? I thought that was how they sold the vaccine. Didn't they sell it on the fact you needed to rush out back in January and February and March and be the first ones to be able to get your life back because this vaccine was going to save us all? Now this guy is saying, well, that confuses people because they think they're actually protected by getting the vaccine. What?
But when you think about childhood vaccines, for example, some of them we actually give 3 or 4 doses before we actually get to the basic level of protection.
They didn't tell us that up front, now did they?
And so what we have to distinguish here is for the immune compromise, for example, where they never did accomplish getting to that level of protection with their first 2 doses. So giving them
you never got there for you immunocompromised people. That's something like 1/3 of Americans now. We're so sickly as a society. Did they tell you that when you got the shot? Oh, no, this didn't get you to any level of immunity. This isn't going to work for you.
Third dose is not really a booster. It's what I call part of the prime series.
Oh.
Now, for those that did get adequate immune protection at one point, then it wanes. That then becomes a booster kind of idea, meaning that, okay, you did get protection, but it's starting to not look so good. Let's boost it up. And I think distinguishing those are important because we don't want to use boosters if we don't have to prevent serious illness and hospitalizations. We need the vaccines around the world. But if we need them for a prime series to say you got to have 3 doses before you're protected, then I think that's a very different situation.
Oh, of course. Now listen to what he says. Now listen to this. I for the life of me, I can't figure out how he gets away with saying this. This, again, is this Osterholm guy. And I want you to listen to what he says about vaccine injuries. The definitiveness with which he goes on the national news and says these things.
But let me just remind you of this. 185 million people in this country have received one of the mRNA vaccines, either the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccines. And if you look at the only side effect that those vaccines have had has been a type of inflammation around the heart called myocarditis. It's very...
Wait, what? I'm going to play that again. This was such a stunning clip to me. This is he's like one of the top health guys in this country, fully credentialed. He knows the science. He says there's only one side effect to these vaccines.
Or the Moderna vaccines. And if you look at the only side effect that those vaccines have had has been a type of inflammation around the heart called myocarditis. It's very, very rare, and it's typically very mild. Not one person, this is an important number, not one person in this country has died as a result of the 185 million people who have received the vaccine.
What?
I wish aspirin had a safety profile that good.
Not one. I'm going to play it again. This is what this guy said on national news, and he will continue to be on national news.
Very, very rare, and it's typically very mild. Not one person, this is an important number, not one person in this country has died as a result of the 185 million people who have received the vaccine.
Now, where in the world could he be getting that information? Here is the FDA on their little PR call on the approval of the Pfizer conformity vaccine.
I'd like to take this opportunity to comment on one of the biggest challenges that we still face in getting the public vaccinated, and that's the overwhelming amount of information that's been circulating about COVID-19 vaccines. We've heard false claims that COVID-19 vaccines cause infertility, contain microchips, and cause COVID-19. And worse, we've heard false claims that thousands of people have died from the vaccine. Let me be clear. These claims are simply not true.
That's your FDA. So Osterholm says not a single person has died from these vaccines. He says there is only one side effect of these vaccines, and that's a very mild heart damage. And it's very rare. And you've got the FDA coming out and saying, let me be clear. Nope. Thousands of people are not dying from this vaccine. I've got the VAERS numbers right here. I mean, this is the bizarro world we live in. As of last Friday, according to VAERS, the CDC's own record-keeping website, 13,068 deaths, 17,228 permanently disabled, 54,142 hospitalizations. And when Osterholm says there is only one side effect, and that is a mild heart damage, a mild myocarditis, I've got a list here. Anaphylaxis, 5,619. Bell's palsy, 4,681. Miscarriages, 1,607. Heart attacks, 5,882. Myocarditis, 4,861. That's what he said is the only problem. Thrombocytopenia, low platelets, 2,738. Shingles, 7,080 cases. This is on the CDC's website. And these people come out from the FDA and say, it's all lies. Nobody's dying. There's only one side effect, and it's rare. Unbelievable. Of course, if we play the game, Anthony Fauci, the man at the end of the stick with the carrot that keeps moving along with us, he's given us the if we behave, he's got an end to this thing for you. Oh, man, hold on a second. Looks like I've got the wrong clip there. All right. Well, we'll go on to Anthony Fauci. Boy, I tell you what, I rarely fumble on these things. I put a lot of time into this. Anthony Fauci said, there may be some semblance of normalcy. I think I'm quoting directly. Some semblance of normalcy by next spring. So parents, you better keep going to those school board meetings because they're not taking their foot off the pedal. And you can only imagine what they will dream up between now and next spring. Apparently, though, Fauci doesn't talk to the lying Walensky, the CDC director.
Additionally, reports from our international colleagues, including Israel, suggest increased risk of severe disease amongst those vaccinated early.
Wait, what? Anthony Fauci says everybody needs to rush out and get the jab because that's the only way you're going to get any normalcy by next spring. And then the CDC director comes out and admits what the data is. I mean, I got to tell you, something happened and she accidentally told the truth. Listen to the words of this again. You are at increased risk of severe disease if you get the shot.
Additionally, reports from our international colleagues, including Israel, suggest increased risk of severe disease amongst those vaccinated early.
Increased risk, not similar risk, They're not just saying that the vaccine is failing, that if you were vaccinated early, that it's worn off and you're just at the same risk as everybody else of getting sick. No, they are saying you're at increased risk of getting sick. This was an MD, Dr. Christina Parks. She testified in front of the Michigan legislature, I believe, talking about antibody-dependent enhancement, which is exactly what's happening in Israel that Walensky just alluded to.
What about the flu vaccine? Well, they have shown that basically there's no difference, there's no statistical difference if you're vaccinated or unvaccinated, whether you get the flu or not. But it's
flu vaccine has been a scam for years and years and years and years, and millions of Americans rush out to get it every year.
Even worse, because although that first year it is somewhat effective, it's about 65% effective at preventing symptoms in you, after that it actually has negative efficacy. And I want to address this because it's very important. Vaccines are made to a specific variant, and when that variant mutates, the vaccine no longer recognizes it. And so it's like you're seeing a completely new virus, and because that's so, you actually get more severe symptoms when you're vaccinated against one variant, and then it mutates, and then your body sees the other variant. So there's the potential, and the science shows that, in fact, with the flu, if you get vaccinated in multiple years, you are more likely to get severe disease, you are more likely to have more viral replication, and you are more likely to be hospitalized, both in adults and in children. We are seeing the same thing in COVID with the Delta variant. And so we are mandating that people get a vaccine that could actually make them more sick when they're exposed to the virus. In fact, this week, a paper came out, and what it showed is that with this Delta variant, when you're vaccinated, your body makes antibodies that are supposed to neutralize the virus, but they were supposed to neutralize the old variant. When they see this new variant, what they're doing is they're actually, the antibodies are taking the virus and helping it infect the cells. All right, that science was just published this week. We need to be looking at the science, and we need our policy to reflect the science, and we also need it to reflect our rights.
We are headed down the same path Israel has gone down right now, and they are in a catastrophe. It's stunning that this is going on in the United States. I go back to my initial quote of the day. You cannot make somebody understand something if their salary depends on not understanding it. The entire medical community is putting their own personal wallets ahead of the actual science. I'll be right back.
Citizens from all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
Boy, I'm going to leave a lot of crazy on the table today. I've probably got 30 more clips to play. I'll have to save them for another time. I've not managed my time well today, but I do want to make a positive impact on my listeners' lives. And the best way I can do that to make you have a good weekend is make sure that you head out to Your Pie this weekend. It's pizza time. Your Pie, 10-inch brick oven-fired pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, brownies, gelato, beer, wine, TVs. Got high school football tonight. College and pro football during the weekend, so now is the time to get out there. It's a fantastic place to watch a game with buddies, take the family, take the kids, take a date, whoever you want to enjoy it with. It's fantastic food. This is a veteran-owned, locally-owned business that supports this station, and we support them. And I love having an advertiser that I have great confidence in, because everybody who goes tells me how fantastic it is. Make sure you download their app from the App Store, because you'll get all kinds of points for going. Make sure you clock it when you get to the register, so you're getting your points, and you'll get freebies and discounts and all kinds of little benefits from that. So get the Your Pie app. Their app. They are at 340 Calhoun Station Parkway out in Gluckstadt, and make sure you tell them that Mike Madison sent you. All right, I can't resist this one. This was so bad. You want to talk about how bad Joe Biden is? I've got to play this one. I cannot leave this one on the table. Joe Biden admitting that his staff gives him a list of which reporters he should call on and in which order.
He gave me a list here. The first person I was instructed to call on was Kelly O'Donnell of NBC.
Listen to this. I got to play this again. This is him looking down at his notes, and he says the words out loud. This is why they don't let him speak very often. He says what should not be said. First person I'm instructed to call upon first.
Gave me a list here. The first person I was instructed to call on was Kelly O'Donnell of NBC.
Holy cow. That's the, and you know, also that is the dishonesty of the media. Those their questions are all staged. They're all planned. Joe knows what questions he's going to get. His staff knows what questions he's going to get, and the media knows how to ask them and when to ask them. This was an interesting one on the evacuation numbers.
Than 70,000 people have been evacuated in the past 10 days, including more than 5,400 Americans.
70,000 people out of Afghanistan, only 5,400 of them were Americans. And Jen Psaki, she makes a slip, or did she, again, accidentally tell the truth? Listen to the way she describes the blank-demic.
I will say that the president's looking forward to welcoming the prime minister, who's already in town, as you know, having a variety of meetings today. We expect their conversation to be wide-ranging, to cover a range of topics of mutual interest, everything from COVID-19 and our efforts to address the global pandemic to regional interests, everything from COVID-19 and our efforts to address the global pandemic to regional security issues, which could include a range of topics.
The global plandemic, straight from the White House spokesperson. There you go. It's confirmed. We knew it. All right, that's about all the time I've got today. Sorry, a lot of crazy left on the table this week, but we'll get to it next week. So join me then. Have a fantastic weekend. I'll see you on Monday. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.